Can faith and reason work together, or are they somehow mutually exclusive? What role do facts and evidence play when it comes to the Christian faith? This is Reasonable Faith, Conversations with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and on behalf of Dr. Craig, I want to welcome you to this discussion as Dr. Craig examines apologetics, reason, faith, and philosophy.
Dr. Craig, a lot of people don't like the word apologetics because they say, what do we have to apologize for? And sometimes the term there kind of turns people off.
Yes, it is sort of a turnoff. I don't like the English word apologetics either because it does have that connotation. But if you understand the derivation of the word, you can understand it really doesn't have anything to do with being sorry that you're a Christian. It comes from a Greek word, apologia, which means a defense, as in a court of law. So this would be the field of theology that specializes in providing a defense of Christian truth claims. And so I will often prefer to speak of, say, defending the faith rather than apologetics because it does have such a misleading connotation in English.
So that's what it means. It means to give a reason or give a defense for why you believe what you believe.
Yes, I would define apologetics to be that branch of Christian theology which tries to answer the question, what is the rational warrant for Christian truth claims, or what is the rational justification for thinking that Christianity is true?
Obviously, we'd want to know if we have biblical warrant for engaging in apologetics.
Well, I suppose that's right. You would, if this were something that were unbiblical, we wouldn't engage in it. And so we look to what the Scripture says, and I think that what we find is that both Jesus and the apostles engaged in providing reasons and evidence for the truth of the message they proclaimed.
The probably key verse that we often hear on this area is 1 Peter 3:15. Mm-hmm. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you for the hope that you have.
Yes, and the word there that you gave as answer is apologia, to give a defense or a reason for the hope that is in you.
Paul seemed to do this as well when we find him confronting the brilliant philosophers there on Mars Hill in Acts 17. Was he engaging in apologetics there?
Absolutely, and elsewhere throughout the book of Acts. The book of Acts is really quite remarkable when you look at Paul's typical procedure. He would argue, this is the language used by Luke to describe what Paul did, he would argue in the synagogues, persuading people, trying to convince them that Jesus was the Christ. And he would go into the marketplace. He would, for example, rent the Hall of Tyrannus and give daily lectures in the Hall of Tyrannus, trying to persuade people and convince them of the truth of the Christian gospel. And of course, as you say, in Athens, he confronted these Stoic and Epicurean philosophers and argued for the truth of the Christian gospel that he proclaimed. So Paul's standard procedure was not simply to preach the gospel, but to provide arguments on behalf of its truth. Now, I only want to say and hasten to add that when we talk about arguing, we don't mean quarreling. We should never quarrel with an unbeliever, but we mean providing reasons, providing proofs, if you will, for the truth of what we do. But as 1 Peter goes on to say, we do this with gentleness and with reverence.
Yeah, because you can win the argument but lose the soul.
Absolutely.
Paul knew their material, it seems, when I read Acts 17, and he quoted their material to them. He quoted the pagan poets mm-hmm. that they would be familiar with.
That's right.
And used it in his apologetics.
That's right. Paul was culturally attuned to the artists and the thinkers of his day, and so addressed his message in a culturally sensitive way when he was dealing with these different audiences.
Now, a lot of people think that this is something new that has come along. Since our culture tends to be post-Christian, that has become more and more necessary to engage in apologetics and use apologetics in evangelism. Mm-hmm. While that may be true, has the church always used apologetics early church on?
Oh, definitely. In fact, some of the earliest Christian church fathers are referred to as the apologists. And I'm thinking here people like Justin Martyr, Athenagoras, Tatian, and others, these are typically referred to as Christian apologists. And these were early writers who sought to give a defense of Christianity to Roman-educated persons and Greek-educated persons as to why they thought Christianity was true. And some of the early apologetics were also written with Jewish audiences in mind, like Justin Martyr's Dialogue with Trypho, a Jew. A wonderful book on this subject is Avery Dulles's book, A History of Christian Apologetics. Avery Dulles is a Catholic cardinal and great scholar and historian. He's written a tremendous book surveying the whole history of Christian apologetics from the time of the New Testament down through the 20th century. And this has always been an important part of the intellectual life of the church.
I wonder, Dr. Craig, if apologetics can apply to just about any field. It seems like historically it's always been associated with the defense of the Christian faith. But if you are an atheist and you're giving defensive reasons for why you believe atheism, then you're an atheist apologist, aren't you?
Oh, I think that's right. An apologist is really anybody who offers a defense for a particular point of view. So, for example, one might say that Hillary Clinton was an apologist for universal health care in the United States. Alvin Plantinga, the Christian philosopher, will often speak of atheological apologetics, by which he means atheistic arguments for a naturalistic view of the world.
Seems like we can't escape, then, the fact that we represent a view. If we hold a view, we represent that view with our lives and with what we say. In a sense, we're all apologists.
In a sense, we all represent what we claim to be true, but apologetics focuses on presenting rational justification or warrant for Christian faith. And, for example, the testimony of a life well lived, while a tremendous evidence of the truth of the gospel, isn't really apologetics per se, which focuses on providing rational justification and warrant. And I think, unfortunately, far too few Christians engage in providing that kind of a rational apologetic for Christian faith.
Many Christians are intimidated by this. They think that they're going to have to get a degree in seminary or get their PhD in order to use apologetics in their evangelism outreach.
Well, while I do encourage folks to go on and get advanced degrees if they have that opportunity, it's certainly not necessary. I think every Christian layman can have simple arguments as to why that person believes that God exists, for example, and why one believes that God has revealed himself in Jesus Christ. And I would encourage every Christian to have memorized the outlines of a few basic, simple evidences that they can have at their disposal immediately upon recall when someone says, why are you a Christian or why do you believe that God exists? And that's not really hard to do, Kevin. It can be really very simple.
One writer said, know the Bible and develop your apologetics afterward rather than develop your apologetics and then study the Bible, because our apologetics should support the Scripture and be scripturally grounded.
I think that's certainly true, that apologetics is a discipline that one should study after one has begun to master the contents of the New Testament and the Old Testament and Christian theology. I don't by any means think of apologetics as the end-all and be-all of being a Christian. It's just one aspect of it. And the first and foremost thing a person needs to do in terms of being transformed by the renewal of his mind is to become steeped in Christian doctrine and theology. So certainly we want to do our theology and our doctrine first and get those in place before we begin to study philosophy and Christian evidences and science and history and so forth.
Because otherwise we would have a tendency to make the Bible fit our mold rather than know the Bible, and then out of that comes good philosophy and good apologetics.
Well, that's a good point. You could begin to skew what you believe to fit your arguments and so forth, and that would be a mistake. But I want to say, just in terms of the spiritual life, in terms of one's own Christian walk with God, it's far more important to know the truth about who God is and who Christ is, the plan of salvation, what is our need of him, than to be able to give arguments on behalf of those things. First, you have to know what the truth is before you can argue for it.
And I find that apologetics is for the Christian as well as for the non-Christian, in that it glorifies God in strengthening our faith and seeing the wonder and beauty and majesty of God in creation.
Well, I think there are two audiences that apologetics is directed toward. One is definitely the unbeliever, as we seek to give him reasons or grounds for making a commitment to Christ. But on the other hand, I have found in my experience that apologetics is tremendously strengthening and encouraging to Christians. When I go onto a university campus and have a debate with a local professor that is known to be a Christian eater in one of his classes and prove to be pretty indigestible in the debate, and the Christian view comes out on top, the students go away from these events emboldened for Christ, proud to be Christians, their heads held high, and eager to bear witness for their faith on their campuses. So I've seen over and over again what a tremendous encouragement it can be to Christians to have a solid intellectual foundation for what one believes.
For more resources on these and many other topics from Dr. William Lane Craig, visit online to reasonablefaith.com. That's reasonablefaith.com.